So follow along with me this morning, a couple of different scenarios, probably ones that you have found yourself in as well. The first one is this. You're at home, and in my case, my wife asked me to hang a picture. I don't like to hang pictures, but because she's my wife, I'm glad to do it. And so I get out my tools, my hammer, a little nail, find the right spot on the wall, get the tape measure out, make sure it's exactly in the right spot, it's completely level, and as I take back the hammer to strike the nail, I miss because I'm not all that coordinated, and I smash my thumb instead. And so something trickles from your lips that is less than pleasing to God. There's one scenario. Here's another. Let's say you're in downtown Chicago, because I don't think this ever happens in Crystal Lake, but you're in downtown Chicago, and the crosswalk, the little guy there, the little figure is all lit up, and so it's appropriate to walk across the street, and you're walking across the street, and a car comes because it ignores the red light, and it slams on its brakes, and this guy yells at you. He says, "You are the man," or something like that, and he gives you the one-fingered peace salute. And he tells you where you can bury your head, and, well, you yell something back because you are ticked off by what he's saying to you. Scenario number three, you've been working really hard. You have a presentation at work. The boss has asked you to do this thing. You're all prepared. You're ready to go. It comes off just splendidly. You do a superb job. Everyone is impressed, and then the boss takes all the credit. And so you mutter something again under your breath. All right, three different scenarios. In all of those cases, more than likely, we say something, well, maybe out loud or maybe just under our breath. We don't intend to say it. It's not premeditated. It's not something we plan to do. For example, when you are hanging that picture and you are thinking of hitting the nail and you hit your thumb instead, you weren't intending to curse. It just kind of comes out. So this morning, we need to understand what exactly it is that we are saying. Take a look at your sermon notes for this morning. And before we actually look at the history of the curse, there on the very heading, at the very top, our theme throughout has been Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. I want you to say this with me, if you would. Okay, all together. The tongue has the power of life and death. The tongue has the power of life. It can build up. It can complement. It can encourage. Or the tongue has the power of death. It can bring down, it can destroy, it can decay. And so cursing, of course, is in the second category. But we need to understand where curse words come from, because we don't always think about what we are saying. Well, you heard this morning Genesis chapter 3. It's where the curse comes from. We know the history. Adam and Eve, they were created. They are perfect. They're in the garden. They are enjoying the creation. God says you can eat from anything in the whole garden except for from this one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat from that one. And of course, what are you going to do when mom and dad say not to do something? As a child, you're going to do it. We remember that first, somewhere between Genesis 1 and Genesis 3, the devil has fallen. Satan, created as an angel, rebels against God and leads other angels with him. We call them now demons. And now the devil takes the form of the serpent, one of God's good creatures, we must remember. And the serpent comes to Adam and Eve, and he says to them, "You won't surely die if you eat from this tree." It's all a lie. And he tempts Adam and Eve to eat from the tree. So if you want to fill in your notes, the curse is rooted in the unfaithfulness of man in the garden. All of the curse is rooted in our unfaithfulness. Beginning with Satan's deception and his unfaithfulness, that is where the curse begins. As we read the rest of that scenario, we see that a number of things are cursed. But we need to understand that God alone has the power to curse. So my words really mean nothing. Because I don't have any power to send that hammer to hell, or my thumb, or any person whatsoever. God's the creator. He is the one who can bless or curse. In Genesis 3, first, the serpent is cursed because of his deception. And then the ground is cursed. And you think, well, what did the ground do? The ground's innocent. The ground hasn't done anything. But we're told that the ground is cursed because of the sin of Adam. And so even though we do not have the power to curse, destructive things can happen because of our sin. For example, if you go to the next chapter, Genesis chapter 4, we all know the scenario of Cain and Abel. Who are Cain and Abel? They're the sons of Adam and Eve, first sons, right? Remember the scenario. They're bringing a sacrifice to God. Abel's is a good sacrifice. It comes from the best of the flock, the first of the flock. Cain, on the other hand, he's going to skimp. He's going to give God the leftovers. And God calls him on the sacrifice. Says, Cain, what are you doing? You're not giving me the best. And so, Cain, in his anger and in his jealousy of Abel, who is praised for his sacrifice, goes out in the field and he kills his brother. And now God curses again the ground because of Cain's sin. And he says, the ground is never going to produce fruit for you anymore. And all throughout your life, this curse is going to be upon you because of your sin. The power of the tongue, it can bless or it can curse. It can bring good or it can bring evil. So what are we doing exactly when we are using, for example, the GD word? We'll make it PG this morning. So what are you doing? You don't have the power to actually curse, so what are you doing? Well, you're calling down the punishment of God. You're asking God to punish someone. You're asking God in his infinite wisdom to send someone or something to hell. That's what you're doing. Now think about this for a little bit. There's all kinds of curses these days. We just finished the Major League Baseball season. There's a famous curse some of you are aware of, having to do with the Cubs and a goat. Don't exactly understand that. There's another one some of you are familiar with. Many years ago, the Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox, they sold their best player. Anybody remember who that was back in the 20s? Babe Ruth. And so it was thought there was a curse put on the Red Sox. They could never win the World Series because they sold their greatest player. And that they didn't win the World Series until just a little while ago. Or a black cat. We said Halloween, right? Witches, people dress up as in costumes. And we have this idea that there is a curse. If a black cat walks in front of your path, if you walk underneath a ladder, human beings do not have the power to curse anything. But what we can do is call down the punishment of God. Now think about this. The greatest curse of all, greater than any curse on a Major League Baseball team, any curse that could be greater than the black cat or walking under the ladder. The greatest curse is the curse of sin. Unforgiven sin. What does the Bible say about the wages of sin is death. Physical death. That's why all of us eventually, as we were reminded in our reading, just like Adam, will return to the dust because of sin. But not just physical death, there's also spiritual death, which is separation from God, and eternal death, which is suffering in the fire of hell. Now here's the really bad news for the morning. I hate to be the one to bring it to you, but you are all under the curse. All of you, because you sin. You're sinners, so am I. It's what we deserve. And so we don't have to call down God's curse. It's already on us. Not a physical mark, but because of our sin, of our nature, we are destined to go to hell. Unless, and there's always good news, unless someone intervenes. Because you and I cannot talk our way out of the curse. We cannot earn our way out of the curse. We can never do enough good works to make up for all of our sin which led to the curse. In Genesis 3, we read that even though all of these bad things are going to happen, God said to Eve, "You will have the pain of childbirth." God said to Adam, because of your sin, the ground is going to be cursed. There will be thorns and thistles and earthquakes and floods like we saw in New Orleans and fire and all of these acts of destruction. But eventually, my seed will come. My son will come and he will go to the cross and there he will die. And he will crush the serpent. And then he will be raised from the grave and the curse will be broken. You see, the only cure for the curse is the cross of Christ. And so we no longer need to live under the curse. And in fact, because of the grace of God and what he has done, we can actually turn curses into blessings. So now we know the history behind the curse. If you turn over your notes, let's see how we can practically live under blessing. So the first thing is simply to be aware of the truth about cursing. Number one, that we cannot send anything to damnation. Only God can do that. And secondly, to think about how silly our curse words are. When you're cursing that hammer, or you're cursing the person in the crosswalk, or you're cursing your boss or whomever it is. You have no power over any of those things. And secondly, when we do curse, we are pretending that we are God. How absurd is that? Have you created anything? No. God is the one who does that. We're not God. We're the creature. So, first of all, we are aware of the truth. Now, in your notes, I put something that we should curse. I mean, if you want to curse, you at least ought to know what you should curse, right? Any ideas? What should you curse? Curse the things that God hates, right? Like sin. And you could name them. You could make a whole list. The things that God already hates. I just wrote a couple things in my notes. Injustice, maybe. Prejudice. Abuse. Oppression. False teaching. Those things you can curse. Now, don't use curse words. But you can avoid those things and you can reject those things, or perhaps you can help rectify those things and make them right. And secondly, then, what shouldn't you curse? Well, what's the second commandment? Go back to your catechism days. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. So the GD thing should never come from our lips. We should never curse God nor his creation, which pretty much covers everything, doesn't it? Certainly don't curse God's people nor his creation. Instead, learn to think before you speak. Learn to think before you speak. A little parable for you. Kind of puts this in perspective. There was a fly. He was flying around the farm. I can relate to this because where I grew up, there were all kinds of flies, especially in the summertime. Flies buzzing around looking for a good meal. On the farm, the best place to look for a good meal is the hog lot. Lots of hog poop, shall we say. Can I say that in church? I don't know. I just did. So there he is. He's finding a good meal. And he fills himself up with it. He thinks it's really yummy. And he now attempts to fly away. Of course, he has eaten way too much. He is way too heavy. He can't fly away. So he thinks, what am I going to do? Well, there in the corner, there in the barn, in the hog lot, there is a broom. And he thinks, well, if I just climb up to the top of the broom handle, then I'll get a start. I'll be elevated, and I can leap off from there, and then I can flap my wings, and I'll be able to fly away. So he crawls up all the way to the top of that broom handle, and he lifts himself off, and he flaps his wings, but he's eaten way too much. The fly goes down, he spirals down, and splat! Dead fly everywhere. Moral of the story? Don't fly off the handle when you're full of crap. All right? Did I say that in church? I just did. If you remember nothing else this morning, you will remember that. Learn to think before you speak. Proverbs probably says it better. What a joy it is to find just the right word for the right occasion. So often we are filled with emotion, I'll say that. And when we are, we say words that we will regret, words of death and decay and destruction. Instead, letter C, let's encourage others with our words. You know what that word means, encourage? It simply means to fill with courage, to fill others with courage. And how do you do that? You fill them with positive words. You thank them. You compliment them. You motivate them. You express your love to them. You empathize with them. The opposite word is discourage. And that just means to take away someone's courage. And we do that with negative words, with words that tear down. What are your words going to be? Are they going to be tools that build up? Or are they going to be weapons that tear down and destroy? Paul writes, so speak encouraging words to one another. This is how we turn curses into blessings. And finally, surrender your tongue to the transforming power of Jesus Christ. All of us has been redeemed by Jesus on the cross. His blood covers all of us, our heart and our head, in our actions, in our tongue. I remember when I was in college, I never had much of a cursing problem until I got to college and all of my buddies used foul language. And so I thought that was kind of impressive, so I thought that I would try it out as well, you know, impress the girls. I don't know which girls I was trying to impress, but then my mother, when I was home one time, because it's hard to turn that off when you get into another environment, and the word slipped out one time, and she reminded me that all of my body, including my tongue, was redeemed by Christ. And so she challenged me over the next 30 days not to use any of that foul language anymore. And it's amazing. If you can do anything for 30 days, it becomes a habit. And in the period of a month, all of that bad language went away. And I don't know how many of you have that challenge or have that concern or that problem. But if we just once again turn it over to the Lord, knowing that all of us has been redeemed by Him, our words can become those things that build others up rather than tear them down. Turn to the very front of your notes and let's close with this, our memory verse for the day. And let's say this all together. Psalm 19, verse 14. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen.